Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
I'm Azadeh Mashiri from the Global Story podcast, where we're looking at the dramatic series of pager explosions across Lebanon. As security experts scramble to piece together the paper trail, armed group Hezbollah firmly believe Israel are responsible and say they intend to retaliate. So what's next? Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Estás escuchando The Fifth Floor.
The Fifth Floor'ı dinliyorsunuz. Bizimle kalın.
Tumya Ektay, The Fifth Floor, Farnak, Amidi Sobat.
This is The Fifth Floor, at the heart of global storytelling with BBC journalists from all around the world. I'm your host, Farnak Amidi. On August 1st, 2024, news broke of an extraordinary international deal.
The biggest prisoner swap since the end of the Cold War has taken place between Russia and the West. Those who've been freed include the Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich and also the
This is a historic moment, however you look at it, politically, diplomatically, or for the families involved, just emotionally.
The swap involved 26 people being held in seven different countries.
The West not only managed to secure the release of U.S. citizens, but also of 12 Russian political prisoners.
Vladimir Karamazov, he is a man who was sentenced to 25 years for treason for condemning the war on Ukraine.
Sasha Skocheliankov, Russian artist who was jailed after replacing price tags in a shop with anti-war messages. Oleg Orlov, who co-chairs a Nobel-winning rights group, Memorial. The list goes on.
But these people are only a small fraction of those who have been prosecuted in Russia for opposing Vladimir Putin. A few days before this historic moment, as the countries were finalizing the exchange, hundreds of kilometers away, in a remote jail in Far East Russia, a man died in silence. He was a classical pianist, but according to Russian authorities, he was also a dangerous dissident. His name was Pavel Kushnir. Who was he, and why did he end up in a Russian prison cell? My colleague Lisa Focht from BBC Russian has been trying to piece together Pavel Kushnir's story. Lisa, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me, who was Pavel Kushnir?
So as you said, Pavel Kushnir was a classical pianist. He was born in Tambov, central Russia. That's about 400 kilometers southeast of Moscow. His father was also a pianist and educator, and he grew up teaching his son how to play piano. And then Pavel Kushnir finished the famous conservatory in Moscow and then worked as a soloist in different philharmonicas in different Russian regions. But also, as we know from his fans, from his family, he was a man of principle. He had very strong political beliefs, and he was an activist.
Was he well known in Russia?
Not really. So he was known, in some musical circuits in Russia, he was very famous among his friends because they were observing him from a very young age when they were all studying music in Tambov. And many of them said after his death that they thought of him as of some kind of a genius when he was growing up. For many reasons, he was a very talented teenager, but he never built a really big career, even though a couple of months before his death, or almost a year before his death, he was appointed as a soloist at Birobidzhan Philharmonica. But again, he was not a high-profile figure because he was playing in those, fairly small concert halls. He was not as famous as some of the other Russian pianists, many of whom actually support Vladimir Putin. Mm. He was nothing of the sort, wasn't famous whatsoever, I'd say. Most people learn his name after those tragic news about his death.
And Lisa, you spoke to one of his very close friends. How did she remember Pavel?
Her name is Olga Shkryganova. She's also a musician. They studied together, grew up together. She told me that he lived, spoke, and acted differently from any other person that she knows. And he was like that ever since he was a child, really. He was always full of ideas. He never compromised. He always did what he thought was the right thing to do. He was just like, whenever he wanted to do something, he was just like going for it in his work, in his life, in his beliefs. And she said he was a loner, but actually at the same time, he made a lot of friends and people really, really loved him. That it was hard for him to work in like state institutions. And we got to understand that like all, you know, like philharmonicas in Russia, they're basically run by the state. They're all state institution. And it was really, really hard for him to sort of fit in this thing because of how extraordinary he was.
Mm-hmm. He was a big fan of Kurt Cobain and all of these, you know, really rebellious artists and musicians of what kind of like a punk idea. And then he's in this classical music scene, which it's kind of contradictory, isn't it?
It is a bit in the way. And also many of his friends, you know, like they wrote like posts about him, about their memories of him when he died. And one of them, she studied with him in Moscow. And, you know, she was remembering him as someone who had this like dissident image, you know, like often wearing this like shabby coat with a half liter bottle sticking out of his pocket just for show. And he always wore black. And I found one of his interviews when he was telling about his time in Moscow. And he was saying that to this like shocked interviewer that he remembers the moment when someone was playing, you know, like music in this dorm room. It was 5 a.m, you know, the company of 2 homeless guys.
И полная комната пьяных тел, но при этом можно гениально играть про люди Дебюсси на клавиатуре, политой спиртом и подожженной.
Room filled with like drunken people, and he said you can perform a Debussy prelude brilliantly on a keyboard soaked in alcohol and set on fire and watch as tears stream from the eyes of those homeless men. And that's what real art, according to him. He was a rebel. When he was 17, this local student paper interviewed him and asked him what is his idea of the perfect pianist, and the answer was calm, deep, confident, detached, and suffering. And then he was asked what composition he would never perform at his concert, and his answer was the Russian national anthem. That was 2005, different time, but still a very unusual answer from such a young man from a small town.
His friend Olga also said he was a musical genius.
She did, yeah. And when I ask you what she mean by that, she recalled this concert that he gave when they were studying together at the Tambov Music Academy. And he was only 17 back then. And at this concert, he played the entire cycle of 24 preludes and fugues by Dmitri Shostakovich, a famous Russian composer. This performance takes around 2.5 hours. And she said that in the whole world, you can count on one hand the number of people who were capable of this at this time. And of course, you couldn't find people like this in Tambov, in the small town. So that was something that, you know, many people remember, and it shocked them that such a young man could do something like this and would dare to go for something like this.
You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Rising temperatures,
the extreme weather,
melting ice,
they're all interconnected.
How can we solve this?
The Climate Question is the podcast exploring why we find it so hard to save our own planet.
We have many of the tools that we need.
And how we might change that.
If we do smart things right now, we can take care of our descendants.
It is a question of awareness, it is a question of information and access to that information.
The Climate Question from the BBC World Service.
It is based on experience and it is based on science.
Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
I'm Farna Kemedi, and this is The Fifth Floor. On this episode, I'm with Liza Vogt from BBC Russian. She's been reporting on the death of Russian pianist Pavel Kushnir. Liza, what do we know about his arrest? What was he charged with?
From what we know, Pavel Kushnir, after he moved to Birobidzhan and became a soloist, he started his own YouTube channel. It's also very, very interesting because this YouTube channel only had 5 followers at a time and 4 clips. And the name of the channel was Foreign Agent Mulder, something that he adopted from the X-Files television series, which he seemed to like a lot. And in those clips, Pavel was sharing his thoughts about what was going on in Russia. Wouldn't be surprising to his friends, because according to them, he had been very active ever since, 2011, when Russia saw those really big protests. He was against the annexation of Crimea. He spoke against him. That was the reason why his relationship with his family, specifically his mother, deteriorated, because she didn't support him. But after the war started, he was very passionate about opposing them. And so he started this YouTube channel to just share his thoughts about what was going on in Russia. And all those, very short videos, they're filmed on a very old phone. The quality is not very good. And so in the first video, he criticizes the war in Ukraine and the legislation completely banning LGBTQ propaganda in Russia. You know, this famous anti-LGBTQ law. And in those videos, he called the Russian authorities fascists. Going public like this and doing something like this, even on a small YouTube channel, is incredibly dangerous in Russia right now, because there's been a major crackdown on any, expression of discontent with Vladimir Putin's policies and the war in Ukraine ever since Russia invaded in 2022. During the daytime, he was just like giving those concerts, going to local radio stations, and later, maybe after his concerts, he was recording those videos. He was distributing pamphlets and leaflets, in the city at night. He lived this kind of sort of like a double life. And at some point, he was arrested, according to the authorities, for the calls for the violent overthrow of the constitutional order of the Russian Federation. When I say the authorities, actually, the video of his arrest was published on this Telegram channel close to the security services. So most of his friends and his family, they didn't even know that he was arrested. It wasn't like a public announcement. It was a big deal when he came to Birobidzhan, right? He was giving interviews on state TV, but when he was arrested, no one really noticed it. There are so many arrests like this in modern Russia, so that was just like one of them, and no one noticed.
But Liza, you said the video of his arrest was published on a Telegram channel. Tell me about that. What do you see in that video?
This video just shows masked man leading Kushnir into a white minivan. And they're also showing this like Foreign Agent Mulder badge that they found in this apartment. Mm-hmm. He had like a handmade badge saying Agent Mulder as a joke. It looked like something that like a little child would, like do just to play secret agent. But they showed it allegedly as a proof that he is like somehow connected to the West or FBI, or I don't know what they meant by that. The author of this post stated that the case against Kushnir concerned a public call to engage in terrorist activity, which is punishable by up to 7 years in jail.
Aliza, was he ever connected to any bigger political movement, opposition movement? Did he work with any other political activists?
I would say no, not according to what we know. He was a soloist, as a musician, and he was a soloist in his political activities too. He was a loner, again, as his friends told me. He was telling his friends during those, last months, last year of his life, a lot about his activities. He was, for instance, taking pictures of leaflets. And even before he was arrested, according to Olga, his friends, he gone on hunger strikes a couple of times just as a personal protest. He was just doing it for himself, but he never really tried to make contact with other, you know, well, having said that, there are almost no, you know, like organized
opposition.
Political opposition in Russia right now because it's basically illegal.
Was he aware of how dangerous his activities are and how much he would be in danger? And that he was being probably watched by authorities.
According to Olga, and she talked to him, that their last conversation was last March. And according to her, he knew very well that it was really, really, really dangerous, but he did it anyway. She said in one of his letters, he wrote to her, "It's a shame I didn't leave and just look after my creativity and my freedom." And according to her, he understood that there might have been another way, but by the time he realized that, there was no turning back for him. And according to Olga, he knew that by expressing those uncompromising views on the war, Putin, human rights in Russia, he knew he was putting himself at risk. She said at some point he noticed that maybe someone was following him. So he knew he was in danger, but he didn't stop nonetheless. And even when he was arrested, again, apparently, from what we know, first day of his arrest, he immediately went on hunger strike. And the independent news site, Mediazona, spoke to someone who saw Kushnir shortly before he died. That's the only source of information we have, really, because the authorities never made any kind of statement explaining what happened to him. And that person said that Kushnir, he said he looked like a skeleton. By the end of July, when he died, he was refusing both solid food and liquids, and he was only occasionally moistening his mouth with water to speak. And so I guess you could say that he's standing by his principle till the very, very, very end.
Lisa, nobody knew he was in prison. Nobody knew who he was.
No.
Would you say that is why that there was no campaign for him? There was no information about him?
Partly that, because we see how passionate his friends are about him now that he died. And many of them say, if only we knew, if only we, it's just the way we learned about his death was almost accidental. Some of his friends noticed that, you know, she hadn't heard from him in a while, and she started making inquiries, and she heard a rumor that he was arrested. Also, she heard the rumors that he actually apparently died from, you know, this hunger strike, and she called, you know, the police, and they immediately knew his name in Birobidzhan and told her to call the investigative committee, and she called his mom instead, and she confirmed, and his friends were so shocked, and she told their other friends, his mother and his family, they actually didn't want to know everything, why he died and what happened, because they didn't share his views in politics, maybe because they feel scared. That is also possible. You can never know in modern Russia why people chose to, you know, not say something or why they chose to do so. And it's only because of his friends and their dedication we actually now have the full picture.
Does that make you think about how many other people like him are in prison that we don't hear about?
Yes, you mentioned the exchange in the beginning of a conversation, and people who were actually freed as part of the exchange. This is ever since it happened. That's all that they have been talking about. Yes, we're very happy that we are free, but there are so many more people like this. According to Memorial, this is one of the oldest and the most respected human rights group in Russia. There are more than 1,000 political prisoners in Russia officially, but Pavel Kushnir was not included on this list. No one knew that he was a political prisoner. No one knew he was arrested. What it means is that in reality, this number of people who can never be heard, people who were arrested for liking a wrong post, for criticizing Putin to their neighbors, for saying something in a situation where maybe they should have, you know, stayed silent for their own good. We don't really understand this number. You can argue that sharing your thoughts on Facebook or ВКонтакте, which is the biggest Russian social media, doesn't sound like a very big crime, but it is in Russia nowadays, as well as independent journalism, as well as many other things. So the real number, of course, can be much higher.
Lisa Fort from BBC Russian. I'm Farnak Amidi, and the Fifth Floor team was Ali Chajoya, Caroline Ferguson, and Hannah Dean. You've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.
Rising temperatures,
the extreme weather,
melting ice,
they're all interconnected.
How can we solve this?
The Climate Question is the podcast exploring why we find it so hard to save our own planet.
We have many of the tools that we need.
And how we might change that.
If we do smart things right now, we can take care of our descendants.
It is a question of awareness, it is a question of information and access to that information.
The Climate Question from the BBC World Service.
It is based on experience and it is based on science.
Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.